I'm Mark Bayshore. A lot has changed when it comes to the way we approach juvenile justice in the past couple of decades. In the mid-1990s, Michigan was one of a number of states that took a tough-on-youth crime stance, enacting laws that locked up more kids, even for nonviolent crimes. Activists and academics alike challenged harsh sentences in favor of community-based alternatives. Now, states across the country are working to reform their policies and create better outcomes for youth who end up in the juvenile justice system. Michigan was recently one of four states chosen by the National Governors Association to participate in a learning lab for juvenile justice reform. Here to talk about how Michigan's juvenile justice system is changing and what that means for youth, Herman McCall, Director of Juvenile Justice Programs for the Michigan Department of Human Services. Welcome, Mr. McCall. And also joining us, Kristen Scaley, Senior Policy Associate at the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. Welcome, Kristen.
Good morning.
Herman, can you give us a picture of what the juvenile justice system looks like in Michigan, and who manages this?
It's a very interesting system, because in Michigan we have a decentralized system. So while we sit at the state level and look at developing programs and policy and oversee the operation of three state facilities, it's really a county-based system. So each county develops their approaches and philosophies related to how they manage and deal with juveniles in their individual counties.
Have we had a county-based system for a long time? Has that been a part of the landscape for many years?
That has been.
Okay.
Yes.
And how many kids enter the system yearly, let's say?
Well, that's a interesting question, because that's one of the issues that we're dealing with because of our system is data.
Because of decentralization?
Exactly.
Okay.
And it's not unique to Michigan. Across the country, and even as a part of our involvement in the National Governors Association Learning Lab, that was one of the big issues, was data. You know, how do we manage it? How do we get accurate numbers on various things related to kids in the system?
Kristen, how much has changed when it comes to how the state approaches juvenile justice issues in the past couple of decades?
Oh, sure. Yeah. We, to kind of relate Michigan to other states in the nation, you know, we're really seeing the shift from being tough on crime to getting smart on crime. Michigan is one of those states that's having a lot of really great and innovative changes. Because the state is so decentralized and so county controlled in many ways, it actually has a lot of positive aspects to it. A lot of states, California, for example, is actually reaching to try and become decentralized, to actually have this local control, because when you see very large state-run gigantic, big facilities that house, you know, call them youth prisons, that's not a positive thing. We've actually, we're seen as a very innovative, because we don't have those. We've actually, in the past 10 years, we've closed seven large state facilities. We're only down now to three, and we utilize them really as like a last resort safety net type of placements.
A lot gets mentioned frequently here in our state, how expensive it is to maintain the justice system. How much money does the state spend on juvenile justice, Herman? Is that a big part of the costs incurred?
Again, that's a number that I don't have a specific handle on, because the state, of course, commits significant dollars to juvenile justice, but at a county level, there are also funding that occurs there. And as Kristen said, positively, there are some very innovative things happening at a county level that are more cost-effective types of approaches to the system.
We'll point out, too, that one of the real leaders in statewide reform, Representative Joe Hoveman, has been a guest on this program, and we have talked about this before. Kristen, what are some of the advantages of having this decentralized mm-hmm. model where each county is making its own decisions.
Well, like I just said, one of the biggest advantages is so that we don't have these gigantic state-run, not that it's a problem having state-run facilities, but we don't have these large, what we call youth prisons. Each county can make its own decision about, where a youth is, if a youth needs to be placed out of home, whether or not the county wants to focus its funds on what we call community-based alternatives, so things like probation or diversionary tactics, types of family therapies or one-on-one intensive types of therapies to really treat the youth. Because a lot of times what we see when these young people are committing crimes or offenses or acting out, really there's something deeper. That it actually stems not just to that young person, but to their family or to, what's going on, in their school system. And so the counties are able to be more, to be more innovative. One of the best successes that we've had in the last couple years, actually, is that in the DHS budget, they are offering what's called the in-home community care grant. It's offered to rural counties to actually incubate and create more of these community-based alternatives. It's a pot of money. It's a grant-run program that the legislature put in. DHS is housing the budget. And right now, I believe there are 6 counties that are utilizing the money. This coming year, there's more funds. There's $1.5 million in the budget for additional rural counties to actually create more options for kids to stay out of placements and out of facilities once they enter the court system.
Kristen Staley is one of our guests. Kristen is Senior Policy Associate at the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. We're also joined by Herman McCall, Director of Juvenile Justice Programs for the Michigan Department of Human Services. We're talking about changing approaches to Michigan's juvenile justice system. Herman, you mentioned a data challenge earlier, and that is one of the disadvantages, I guess, of a decentralized system. How important is data in this whole thing? You're suggesting it's pretty important, and that data could tell us things that we haven't been able to get at before.
Absolutely, and there certainly is the data there, but there are a number of systems. So in some instances, we have
computer systems. Does it get to that level?
Well, computer systems, how we collect data, how we share data, how we use that data. In some instances, because of the multiple systems, we may have accurate data, but it may be 2 years old. So for us to stay on top of what it is that we want to do to maximize the impact of the outcomes that we want to develop for juveniles in the system, we in some instances may be a step behind. So we want to get better data. We want to have evidence-based programming. We want to develop more community-based alternatives. And all those things will create better outcomes for youth in the system.
I know one of the goals of this program is to help the state deal with the so-called school-to-prison pipeline. That's something President Obama has also outlined as a priority for his administration. Kristen, can you tell us what the school-to-prison pipeline is?
Sure, yeah. It's really a term of art, if you will, but it's the concept that when a young person is pushed out of the school system, whether it's through expulsion or through long-term suspension, that young person is exponentially has a greater chance of ending up in the court system later on in life, whether it's through juvenile justice or actually, as an adult in the criminal justice and eventually correction system. We see in the state of Michigan, actually, that about 80% of our prisoners do not have either a high school degree or a GED. So if you kind of relate that back, that means because they did not finish high school, or one of the factors of not finishing high school or not finishing school at all, or maintaining a degree, and place them into the prison system.
And did zero tolerance policies accelerate
that
trend?
Absolutely. And during that mid-90s, when we see those get tough on crime laws, things like zero tolerance policies, things like being able to try youth of any age as an adult, really ended up pushing young people deeper and deeper into the system. So our zero tolerance policy is one of the toughest in the nation. Very fortunately, that right now we're seeing a great push to get rid of it and to make it a lot less harsh on those young people, to actually to identify those people who are actually really kids who really just need to stay in school and not be kicked out because of some sort of issue.
And the atmosphere is changing here, Herman. How much of this depends on the legislature's willingness to take a look at some of these laws, like zero tolerance, that contribute to this?
It does. And right now, we're very fortunate that Senator Tanya Shoemaker has agreed to sponsor some legislation related to zero tolerance laws, and then also to define truancy and expulsion and those types of issues. So we're very hopeful because, as Kristen said, while no one can argue the fact that we need to have safe communities and safe schools, we went too far. And so we're not trying to eliminate the ability that kids in school will be, their behaviors will be addressed appropriately. But zero tolerance, we've got kids being pushed out of school for things like disrespect, for just non-violent types of behaviors. And as Kristen said, that is kids moving more rapidly into the system that don't need to be there.
We're just about out of time. I've got to ask you both how confident you are about the future in this regard.
I'm very confident. I think that we're seeing changing the zero tolerance policies is just one step. Those laws that happened in the mid-90s are beginning to change, and we realize that there's research now, that there's a change in culture and understanding that these are kids and that they aren't violent super predators anymore.
Herman, you share that optimism?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think we have some excellent collaborations and working together that will help us get to where we need to get.
Herman McCall is the Director of Juvenile Justice Programs for the Michigan Department of Human Services. Kristen Staley is a Senior Policy Associate at the Michigan Council on Crime and Delinquency. Many thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good luck.